I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome to another episode of Rise Together. Today, we welcome Rosemary Ketchum. Rosemary has been a community organizer in Wheeling, West Virginia for about a decade. Now, she's the state's first openly transgender elected official. As the associate director of the city's local drop-in center for the National Alliance for Mental Illness, she worked with community members experiencing poverty, homelessness, and mental health issues. A lot of the problems with access to mental health care in the area were systemic, and over her decade of advocacy work, she saw that they weren't being addressed properly. So she ran for office. National media expressed shock when Ketchum was elected in a small town in a conservative state. Her victory? It's historic. In addition to being the first in her state, Ketchum is also one of only 27 out trans elected officials in the country, while there are an estimated 1.4 million trans people in the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, let's rise together with Rosemary Ketchum. What would the world look like if we all pushed ourselves to have candid conversations with people who didn't look like us, think like us, or live like us? I'm Dave Hollis, and I'm on a mission to learn more about this world by meeting more of the people who live here. You may not always agree with everything you hear, but I guarantee you'll come away more informed on topics you might never have thought to seek out before. This isn't just a podcast, it's a community. And when we raise each other up, we all rise together. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Rosemary Ketchum is here. I'm so excited to have you, Rosemary. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So just by way of introducing yourself a bit to the guests of this Rise Together podcast, will you give us just a little background, just a little history in how you got your start in mental health advocacy and maybe how that advocacy led to what you do today?
Wonderful. So I've been a community organizer in the state of West Virginia for quite a few years now. And I started community organizing for a few reasons, but most importantly, to really engage my community on a few really key issues. And those key issues include racial justice and LGBTQ equality, but also mental health. And mental health has been a through line in my life and my family's life for a very long time. So I went to school for psychology, because I love, you know, everything about the human brain, and I have a lot of questions about the decisions we make and the behaviors we have. And I was lucky enough to get a job while I was in college as a director of a mental health facility.
Wow. So you had something that you were passionate about. I'm going to assume that you in some way saw a need inside of your community. And at some point you decide to pivot from your work inside of this advocacy to running for office. Mm-hmm. Which does not,
you know, like doesn't feel crazy because, of course, if you have passion and you see need and you think yourself to be the most qualified human being that could help bring change or policy to the thing that has issue in your, you know, in your town or your state, fantastic. It turns out that in making the decision to move from advocacy, that you happened to have become the state's first openly transgender elected official. But I'm going to assume, and I don't want to assume, I shouldn't assume anything, that you ran because of your belief in you being the most qualified candidate who happened to have been transgender. But I'm curious what the inspiration was in wanting to jump into politics and how your identity in some way or not played a role in that choice to get in the mix.
Great question. I never wanted to run for office. And, you know, I, as a community organizer, as a grassroots organizer, kind of loved the idea of being, you know, kind of scrappy and underdog and sticking it to the man. And and while doing that, we worked on some really, really important issues. I got some things done. You know, more often we failed than won our issues, but that's politics. And I always acknowledged and knew that while we had policy positions and we had, you know, we wrote bills and we knew what needed to be done to solve a lot of the issues that we cared about, eventually and inevitably, the biggest obstacles were the elected officials that we needed to convince to support our cause. And they were often less compassionate, less empathetic, and less motivated than anybody else, unfortunately. And, you know, and even then, I didn't decide that I should be the person to run for office. I asked all my friends that, you know, if they would run for office. And some of them did, most of them didn't. And, you know, I came to the realization that if we wanted to actualize the issues we cared most about, we had to take the next step and, you know, support, you know, members of our advocacy groups and, you know, organizations to run themselves. So I always loved supporting other candidates, but, you know, this time it turned out to be my turn.
It's so, I mean, I love it. I read the quote that you had in Time magazine. I mean, hello, Time magazine covering local politics as they should.
Yeah.
Your quote was, "I never considered running for office, not because I didn't think I could do the job, but I just didn't think I was allowed." And so, man, for anyone who in any way has ever afforded what they think you can do or what is okay or not okay, there's something amazing in this recognition that any of us can be called to step into an opportunity like this. And you heeded the call inside of a state that had never previously recognized someone who is like you to do this job. And you were voted in, you were elected. So, I mean, it's an amazing thing.
Yeah, you know, I think, unfortunately, West Virginia isn't always cast in the most flattering light. There are a lot of misconceptions about our state, a lot of things that people believe, and who may never have been to our state before. And, you know, with this election, I definitely didn't anticipate, you know, national headlines. I thought if I made the front page of our local paper, I'd probably frame it. And so to see the you know, the country respond in such a positive way, I hope impacts also the narrative that people have about West Virginia.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Anytime anyone does a first, anyone anytime has an only, right? Like, you are in a town called Wheeling that I'm going to guess most listeners of the Rise Together podcast couldn't find on the map. Man, the media, they love a story about the first or only. And in your case, the national news attention or the focus of this, you know, smaller town kind of thing becoming something that might be picked up by bigger publications has to have been, I'm going to guess, unexpected. But was there something in it that you were prepared for, or was it just absolutely, holy cow, what in the world is going on?
You know, it's thrilling for sure. I mean, I gained thousands of Twitter followers overnight. And, you know, like you said, Time magazine gives you a call, and CNN and MSNBC. Yes, it is somewhat overwhelming. I did not prepare for it. However, you know, I think, you know, it, my race and the somewhat historic nature of the race was compounded by all of the other things happening in the world. I mean, I was elected during Pride Month. by accident. I mean, our original election day was in May, and so it needed to be pushed back because of COVID. The Supreme Court of the United States, of course, ruled inside of transgender workplace protections and their SCOTUS decision. All of that, I think, kind of, those were the ingredients for a national story that was kind of riveting and made sense and hopefully also provided some hope, you know, in a world that seems kind of hopeless.
Yeah. So let's talk for just 2 seconds about the federal civil rights law that the Supreme Court of the United States held up protecting gay, lesbian, transgender workers. I don't know if it was a surprise. It felt like, man, what an awesome affirmation of a thing that ought to exist. And yet it happening during Pride felt super serendipitous. And the fact that it was happening as other stories like your own were making news felt like it was just, good thing on good thing. But talk a little bit about what a decision like that means inside of the community and how the confirmation of protection in some ways affords the ability for you to continue to do the work of advocacy and the work inside of the community.
Yeah. So, forever, it has been the case that, you know, LGBT people have been on the front end of discriminatory workplace practices. If your boss learned that you had a spouse of the same sex or, you know, simply were dating someone who they didn't approve of that was also of the same sex, you could be fired or not hired at all. And that was, you know, legal on the basis of their right to do so. And, you know, that happened, and I'm sure will continue to happen often. And for me, it was a surprise that the United States Supreme Court ruled in favor of transgender workplace protections, not because I didn't think it would ever happen, but I mean, this is the most conservative court of our lifetime. And for one of the more conservative justices on this court, Justice Neil Gorsuch, a Trump appointee, to make the majority opinion was refreshing and absolutely historic. So it also, I think, you know, it given me hope that maybe, the judiciary, component of our government is less polarized than others. Because, if it were a political court, they would have not, voted in favor of transgender or LGBT workplace protection. So that was really incredible. And also the DACA decision as well, just I think 1 or 2 days later was, also incredibly powerful. So this has been an incredibly convoluted Pride Month in some really great ways and some ways not so much.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A lot of people, I'm going to guess, listening to the show, I'm myself included, I started our conversation before we were recording, representing that I do not have as much kind of just like knowledge of the experience of a person who is transgender. And I love an idea of having a conversation like this so that I can also sit closer and become a little bit smarter. My exposure to trans visibility, as it were, has more than anything come through shows like Transparent or Orange is the New Black. And I know, Laverne Cox being on the cover of Time back in 2014 is a thing that I can, I can still remember, like, wow, right. Look at this. But I have not myself really leaned into and had, a doing life with someone kind of experience to actually understand what it is that you are having to overcome when it comes to societal anything. For anyone who maybe like me, can you just, help dimensionalize a little bit of what, the community at large mm-hmm. has to work through? I'm not looking, if you have them, stats are great, but like, I don't have a perfect handle on kind of what it is to kind of row against the current of the world that we live inside of.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's incredibly, you know, cultural, all the implications that we deal with are societal and cultural, especially as trans folks, because, you know, essentially we are betraying the societal expectation of our biological sex. We are saying, we don't feel this way. This isn't the way it works, at least not for us. And that's really hard because, I mean, think about the centuries of built up societal expectation that has been affirmed for centuries until this last one. You know, although we know trans folks and LGBT folks have existed forever, I mean, you know, some of the first kind of identifiers of the trans experience exist in Native American culture. We have yet to have a real kind of inflection point in cultural consciousness or awareness. And I think that's happening now in a really powerful way. And so when I was a kid, there, you know, I'm 26 years old. I was born in 93. I, you know, did not have representation available to me in the way that we have now. And it makes, I mean, I feel old even saying it, but the only real introduction to the LGBT community that I had growing up was Will and Grace, which was meant to entertain and not educate. So I think for my parents as well, that was their only real familiarity with LGBT culture. And while I love the show, it wasn't built to kind of, you know, be a masterclass in LGBTQ, you know, lived experience. And I can't even think if there was a trans portrayal, you know, in that TV show. And so nevertheless, I grew up and I, you know, really sought these representations that weren't kind of traumatic and tragic, you know, because thinking back to the representations that I knew most more closely as a kid of trans people, they were, you know, sex workers and, you know, subject to incredible violence and were on the outskirts of, you know, their communities and used drugs. And while that can be true and it's, you know, a horrible plight on the LGBT community, that was not the normalized, you know, thing that I think I needed as a young trans person. It was more frightening than anything. So I hope that now we have more normalized or typified examples of the trans experience. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not a model. I'm not a whatever. You know, I am a normal person doing normal things in a normal little town. And I hate the word normal. I work in mental health. We never use it. But in the context of culture, I think it's really important to see a very, you know, a very healthy portrayal of the trans experience. And, you know, I hope that we can influence our culture enough to make sure that's the, you know, that's a priority.
Yeah, no, that's good. I heard you in an interview at one point talk about the distinction between ignorance and bigotry, which I think is such an important thing because one, I think there's just a lot of ignorance, you know, and just kind of like what the experience of someone who's transgender actually is and what it means. Can you just, for anyone who's a little less familiar with transgender in general, talk about that difference between the two and how there may be a role that anyone who's listening can work against either?
Yeah. So, I mean, growing up trans, you encounter some of the most awkward experiences maybe ever, you know, especially being trans in rural America. And, you know, I remember, you know, having experiences with people who would ask me about my genitalia within the first 5 minutes, or they would, you know, point out my Adam's apple or just weird things. And, you know, I've gained a lot of confidence over the years. I'm no longer an insecure teenager, but I sooner or later began to identify and differentiate the people who were doing this on purpose and were unkind and hateful in a way, but differentiate that between the people who just did not know and did not have the language and were working with an empty toolbox. They had no frame of reference here. And, you know, I learned many times over that I was the first person, you know, first trans person this individual had met. And, you know, I tried to you know, come to those situations with grace and diplomacy and patience, because the last thing I want to do is punish curiosity. Because the second somebody kind of goes out on a limb to ask a question they're uncomfortable with, if we slap their hand, they may never ask that question again, or they may never feel a willingness to learn or understand. I understand that I am, for some people, the only trans representation that they see in their town. And I, while no trans person or LGBT person owes somebody their story or the facts about their personal history or medical history, I feel a kind of responsibility to try to be as open as possible for the folks who are genuinely curious and ignorant, but want to build that toolbox, want to have the language, you know, at their disposal, so that the next time they meet somebody or have to have a conversation at a dinner table, you know, they're prepared to be an ally.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Now that's good. I like that. On this Rise Together podcast, we have a lot of parents that are listening. A lot of parents who, if you're a parent, I think you have to have children. If you have children that maybe are questioning their gender identity or have maybe recently come out as trans, and you, with your accomplishments, you're now obviously a very visible out trans person that they could potentially look up to. What is something that you would want these parents to know about how best to show up for their kids if they find themselves in a situation where they're being introduced with something that they also may be unfamiliar with and don't totally know how to handle?
I would say embrace self-expression. One of the most fascinating things to me, just from a psych mental health perspective, you know, gender identity and gender roles are fascinating in and of themselves. And there's a great discussion about nature, nurture, and what's innate and what isn't. And I actually am fascinated by folks who aren't LGBT, the kind of gender expression that cisgender, heterosexual people experience. Because as trans people and LGBT people, we are, you know, I think privileged to be liberated in our ability to have free self-expression. I mean, we do live in a world that is not always kind, but, you know, I get to do this in a way that, you know, I think I'm given permission because of my trans identity. A person who does subscribe to, you know, more rigid gender roles, who is cisgender, heterosexual, they don't have the same liberties to express themselves in their gender identity or sexuality without having to, you know, get permission or have to kind of qualify it in some way. And so for parents, I think, you know, it's easy to be scared and to not know what's going on and to, you know, and to hope that what you're doing is enough. And all I can say is that so long as you lead with love and compassion and let your child know that you're an ally, language is super important. And I say this often that, you know, you never know who you're in the room with. You never know what people are going through. And so you make a joke or you make a, you know, whatever. If somebody doesn't understand you're an ally, they may be very uncomfortable around you. And so I think the language we use is super, super important. And especially for children, they pick up on it so so incredibly. So, I mean, I remember being a kid, and if somebody made a gay joke, whether it was, you know, and you know, just lighthearted or not, I remembered it. And I thought, oh, they might, you know, that's something I need to kind of note just for my own survival, I guess. And we live in a different world than, you know, we did 10, 15 years ago. But I think those things still matter.
One thing that any listener can do, I got a tattoo on my arm. It just says the word ally.
Wow.
So it is very clear to anyone who is interested in having a conversation with me where I stand and wanting to be supportive of, frankly, anybody, anywhere, anytime.
Yes.
Let's go. I read you were quoted in Rewire saying, when folks say, I can't believe a trans person can win in a place like West Virginia, I think this is the very place I believe a trans person could win elected office. And you've now proven that with your win. I'm curious, on the campaign trail, did you run into anything that had you questioning the confidence of that statement? Were there strange encounters in the midst of this? Or was it, yep, I'm just going to be the most confident candidate, and who I am will be led by the way that I can help bring advocacy and solutions to the city, and not, you know, anything to do with my identity?
Yeah, it's so funny. Campaigning is my favorite part. I mean, of running for office, knocking doors, and you know, face-to-face voter contact. And, you know, we were lucky enough to do that really early before COVID hit and nobody could do anything. We ran our race for about a whole year before Election Day, while other candidates ran for 4 or 5 months. And we did that consciously because I understood that while I have worked in the city of Wheeling for a decade, community organizing and building relationships, there are plenty of people for whom I did not know and did count on their vote that I needed to engage with and speak to. So I did a lot of the groundwork early on, and I had some really wonderful, humbling experiences, a few awkward ones, none that were traumatic or tragic. I did have one experience where we were driving to a part of our district that's more rural, and that I had not had a whole lot of experience in. And it's a district that is in two counties, so it's a little awkward. I remember, you know, driving up there and kind of getting lost in the streets we were trying to find, and seeing a bar and parking in the parking lot of the bar and walking inside, and me and my volunteer, and we walk in, and like stereotypically one of those saloon scenes where the music cuts and everything gets quiet and people start whispering, and we kind of walk in and walk up to the bartender and ask where a specific street was. And, you know, everybody is kind of furrowed brow and looking at us and very suspicious. And she says, so what are you doing up here? And I say, well, I'm running for office, blah, blah, blah. And I thank her. And we leave, and we do our canvassing. We're gone for hours. I left my car parked in the parking lot, and we come back to the car, and it's like dusk, and we get in the car, and somebody from the bar runs out and is hailing us, saying, hey, hey, hey. And immediately I think, oh my God, I'm going to get in trouble for parking here. I'm so, yeah. And I feel very bad. And he runs out. And he runs up to our car just before we drive away and says, he said, you're the worst politician I've ever met. And I say, oh, I'm sorry. And of course, I'm filled with insecurity. I'm like, oh my gosh, this isn't working. And this, mind you, was the first day I'd ever gone out to canvass. And he said, you're the worst politician I've ever met because you didn't introduce yourself. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was just lost and whatever. And he said, when you left, the whole bar had a conversation about whether you were a man or a woman. And I was like, and my volunteer was kind of like, oh, and I was like, oh, okay. And he said, Bob said, I think that was a girl, but Sally said, nah, that must have been a man. And I'm like trying to hold in my laughter because it's a lot to handle. And he says, well, regardless of what it is, we all loved your energy and everybody wants your business card. So if you could give us a few, I'll pass them out. And he like bid us adieu and went back to the bar. And it was a moment that I think set the tone for the rest of our campaign and makes me think of the, you know, the difference between ignorance and bigotry. You know, he didn't have the language that he was using. He wasn't sure how to approach the conversation. But he kind of got down to the ground level and said, you know, you seem like you could do a good job. We want to learn more. And for me, that, you know, that gave me some humility. And I think hopefully helped us win in the long run.
Local politics, though.
That is local politics for you.
Holy cow. I mean, it's so interesting because, you know, turning on the news right now feels like a be careful that you don't get pulled in for hours and overwhelmed by all of the things that are happening. There's a chance that you can be discouraged sometimes in watching what's happening on the news with how big national politics feels and how hard it might feel as an individual to affect any single thing in such a big machine. I'm not even sure, to be totally honest, how a city council works.
Yeah.
I might Google that when I am actually done. could you just give a little bit of insight for the human who might be listening, who thinks, man, I feel overwhelmed by my ability to personally change everything that's happening in the country, how the possibility of change or affecting things locally through local politics or city councils is a thing that may in fact afford them a chance to feel like they are contributing in a pretty meaningful way.
Yes, so you are right on point. You are speaking my language. I talk about this all the time. You know, we focus on national, federal politics and the progress is glacial and it's frustrating and it feels super hateful and just everybody's fighting. And we do this and it feels sadistic to say, and I do this too. I mean, I love federal politics. I focus on it. I can't help it. And we should be paying attention. That's vitally important. We just had these SCOTUS cases. It's, you know, they do impact our lives. But when people feel apathetic or indifferent about national politics, I try to remind folks that when you think your vote doesn't matter, you know, talk to your mayor, talk to your city council members. I won my race by 15 votes. There were 15 strangers, or maybe people I knew, who decided to walk into a polling location or mail in their ballot and make history, indirectly or directly. And those were 15 people who cared enough about their community to do that. It wasn't rigged. There wasn't an electoral college. There was 15 real people who live on real streets in my ward who decided to vote. And that we wouldn't be talking right now if 15 people voted the other way. And so that makes me, you know, really engaged in local politics because I know how sensitive it is and how much change can be possible. And while each city government is very different, we have different charters and rules about, you know, engagement. There is so much untapped power in local government. And wherever, you know, your listeners live, there is incredible power in your local government because your mayors can make a decision on Monday, enact it on a Wednesday, and you can see the results by Friday. That doesn't happen anywhere else in US politics, but in a city, town, or neighborhood. And especially when we have conversations about racial justice or LGBTQ equality, you know, we have, I think, a particular obligation in local government to tackle these issues. And we have opportunity to do that. You know, in the city of Wheeling in 2016, we passed a non-discrimination ordinance. We didn't wait on our state or the Supreme Court. We said, you cannot fire a person in the city of Wheeling based on who they love or how they dress. And, you know, that was a kind of symbolic, but also very tangible thing we could do as a city to, you know, make good on the promise that we are the friendly city. And so every other municipality in the country has that kind of power and that kind of authority. So yes, register to vote. Make sure you know who your mayor is and your council person because they can really, really change your life.
Let's go, Rosemary. Come on. Get this local politic machine running. I am here for it. We are in the midst of the upside down coronavirus here for how long, who knows. I'm curious how the impact of quarantining or social distancing affected the end of your campaigning because you were elected, yes, inside the window of the upside down, I believe.
Yes, very much so. You know, we did not anticipate COVID, you know, changing our lives. Nobody did. And, you know, running for office is hard as it is. And to have to combat an entire pandemic while you do it is no small feat. However, we know that campaigns are won and lost based on the amount of face-to-face voter contact we have. I mean, there are numbers and stats all over the place. to, you know, affirm that if you talk to voters, you have a better chance of getting elected. And, you know, I knew that before COVID, and that's why we went out in the dead of winter to knock doors and meet people. And, you know, but with that said, we only were able to canvass 30% of our district before COVID hit. And, you know, I was really confident that I was going to win this race before COVID. And the day they said, you can't leave your home, I thought, oh, this might be the end of it. Because the other candidates in our race are older than me, some twice my age, and who had grown up in this community. I was not born in Wheeling, West Virginia. I didn't go to high school here. I don't have a family name. And so in local politics, those things matter a lot. They're not necessarily indicative of a win or a loss, but they do matter. And so for me, it was really, really important to kind of work against those already kind of institutionalized factors. And so we had to re-strategize and really work on our social media presence, which I think at the end of the day, you know, was impactful. But again, we skated by, you know, and so I hope that if COVID had not happened, we would have had a better turnout. But we did it nevertheless.
A win is a win. No one else is counting the 15 votes. You won by a landslide as far as us on this podcast are concerned.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I learned a fun fact today that West Virginia actually became a state by seceding from Virginia during the Confederacy, during the Civil War, in order to rejoin the Union. That is a pretty amazing legacy. That is now like beyond what you have taught me today. All of the facts that I know about West Virginia as a proud serving elected member of government in Virginia. What else should people on the Rise Together podcast know about your great state?
Oh, yes. So we are the original rebel state, not the rebel flag state, as I like to clarify. You know, Wheeling also used to be the first, we were the first state capital in the entire state of West Virginia, not long after Charleston, West Virginia took that over. We are an incredible state for many reasons. And one of those reasons is our landscape. We are the only state in the entire nation that is made up of 100% Appalachian mountains. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, they think of Colorado when they think of mountains, and Colorado is beautiful. But, you know, one of the biggest obstacles we have to work on in the state of West Virginia are the beliefs people have about West Virginia. And so, you know, we really do need to work on our tourism. We could do so much. I'm pro-cannabis. I think we could really do some amazing things in regards to cannabis development and hemp in the state of West Virginia. We are progressive in a strange way. I think we have a lot of pockets of progress in Morgantown, West Virginia, Wheeling, Charleston, Lewisburg, some of the Northern Panhandle. But we are a scrappy state. We're underdog. I hope we're going to really impress people in the next few years.
Good work. All right, West Virginia. I'm coming for some Appalachian Mountain treatment at some point.
Yeah.
I'm
here for it.
All right, we find ourselves in Pride Month. We're going to throw this on, I believe, in Pride Month. I hope that we're going to have that happen. Celebrating Pride inside of quarantine or global pandemic feels criminal in some way. I don't know how you could possibly celebrate the way that you might normally. What is Pride inside of pandemic looking like? How should or how can people get behind and celebrate all the things Pride related in the little time we have left in this month?
Yeah, I mean, pandemic Pride sounds counterintuitive because Pride is all about, you know, being out literally and figuratively and, you know, expressing yourself unapologetically. And while we cannot do that in crowds and assembly, we're already doing that, you know, through mediums like this. We are engaging with folks in a positive, progressive way and learning. And I think what is happening right now, bigger than LGBT politics, I mean, we are having a national conversation about history, about what's happening right now, and what our country will look like for the future. And, you know, the decisions that we make today, the people we elect today, are going to be in charge of shaping the future of this country in a way that I don't think other elected officials have had the opportunity in the past. So we are absolutely at an inflection point in our country. And, you know, I worry that if we don't capture this momentum and really set in stone the values of what it means to be an American, that we will not see the progress we want to see. So make sure you register to vote, you know, be proud of your ability to participate in this democracy, because, you know, it's all we have at this point.
All right. So speaking of elected officials shaping the future of the history of our world, of this country, of your state, what is for you next beyond Wheeling? I mean, you just won, so maybe you're not thinking yet about where you're going to be next, but do you see this as the stepping stone to something that maybe takes you beyond Wheeling, or have you even considered yet what happens after this?
Yeah, I am sworn in next Wednesday, so I have a lot of work to do to earn my space as a city council member and as an elected official. I am excited to support people who run for office, whether they are, you know, people I know, people I don't know, whether it's me or somebody else. I don't know if, you know, I will run for higher office. You know, I feel like I love this work already. I feel like I've been doing it unofficially for quite some time now. But I will take any opportunity to represent the values that I hold dear. And if I can see those actualized in a way that is impactful and influential, I will do anything that I can to make that happen.
That's awesome. We have, as a company, previously supported the work of the Trevor Project that has done a lot of great work inside of the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if there are other advocacy groups that you have personally either been connected to or have passion for that you might share with this audience if they find themselves interested in being able to dive into understanding advocacy or supporting people who are being advocates themselves. Who do you think they should go to?
Great question. A few resources that I really do love include the Transgender Law Center. They have a lot of incredible resources around litigation and also resources around advocacy. I love them. I'm a little biased here, but I love the work of the ACLU across the country. I'm a former state board member here in the state of West Virginia, and the ACLU is doing some of the most incredible work around advocacy and litigation in regards to the LGBT community. So if you're not a member of the ACLU, make sure you make it happen. And in so many states, we have some incredible organizations doing really good work. Here in West Virginia, we have an organization called Fairness West Virginia that I'm so incredibly proud to be associated with and a supporter of. And so we're attempting to pass something called the Equality Act, which would set in place workplace protections, although now we have a SCOTUS decision that does that for us. but also housing protections for LGBTQ people. While we do have this incredible SCOTUS decision to protect folks in their workplace, there are no protections for LGBTQ folks in regards to housing. You can still be evicted or discriminated against in regards to housing in the United States. So in West Virginia, we're trying to pass a law to make that discrimination illegal. We're not there yet, but we're getting close. So I would also search in your own states for organizations that are doing similar work and see how you can what you can do to support it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rosemary Ketchum has just absolutely brought fire to this, the Rise Together podcast, having a conversation about being a first and only, the decision to step into a space where permission had never previously been granted, the willingness to, because of being connected to the spirit of advocacy that lived inside of her, take in just a big step in the public politic space and do work now as an elected official to change the world that she works in and maybe influence others to make that same change. So Rosemary, I'm so grateful for you being here today. What an awesome conversation. And hopefully for anyone who is listening, who maybe has never had an interaction with someone who is transgender, now they can check this box.
Yeah.
It has been a wonderful conversation and maybe leads them to being even a little more curious about any other way that they might be able to step into a posture of advocacy or being an ally on behalf of the community at large. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Rise Together is hosted by me, Dave Hollis. This show is produced by Chelsea Harfouche and edited by Andrew Weller, with production support by Sterling Coates. Cameron Berkman is our executive producer. Rise Together is a product of The Hollis Company.